Welcome to the Best Ever You Network, celebrating our third year on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Thank you for helping us become a number one rated live show with over 1 million global listeners. Our team is on a mission to help you discover your authentic best self and bring it to the world. And now, here's our show.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Best Ever You Show. I'm one of your co-hosts, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. I am here in Maine. And out on the West Coast, we have Dr. Walter Jacobson. How are you, Dr. Walter Jacobson?
Oh, doing great. Thanks. 78 degrees out today. Can't hate it.
Yeah, can't hate it. And we're inching up on you. We're going to hit 50. there was one little patch of snow left in our front yard. I'm like, yes, melt. I shoveled it away. I'm like, okay, you can be gone now. But, baseball's in full swing here. And finally, it was pretty funny. My son got this email from somebody, and it said, now that your baseball season is done and you're into summer baseball, and we're like, wait a minute, the season's open, that was yesterday. So, it's like, what part of the country was that email from? But anyway, so it's good to be here in Maine, and thank you all so much for listening. We've got a great guest with us today. We have JJ Virgin. We're going to be quiet here and just introduce her. So we're going to learn so much in the next hour. JJ Virgin is a celebrity nutrition and fitness expert and a three-time New York Times bestseller. And she's got another book she's going to talk about that's coming out in May. And I have a sneaking suspicion she's going to add that four-time gold medal New York Times bestseller thing to her name and all that as well. But her most recent book is JJ Virgin's Super Impact Diet, Drop 7 Hidden Sugars and Lose Up to 10 Pounds in Just 2 Weeks. And it shows you how to identify the sneaky sugars, crush your sugar addiction, which I broke one of those about almost 4 years ago now, and go from being a sugar burner to a fat burner, which is so critical. And we'll talk about her other books here in a minute, but I just want to make sure we get her on the phone. And how are you, JJ?
I'm good. It's the sugar impact diet, but I'm thinking I love the super impact diet.
Oh, did I say super?
That's
super
good.
The super sugar impact. No, it's the sugar impact diet. I didn't mean to say super. Sorry about that.
I like it. It's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's book five.
There you go. Actually, I just book five is actually in the works right now. So.
Oh my gosh, you are so busy. Wow. Thank you so much for being with us. Before we get started, what's your favorite social media spot? Twitter,
like,
Facebook.
Oh, I was like one I like to hang out in. Oh, I'm definitely a Facebooker. That's definitely my favorite place to be.
Okay, so everybody go find JJ on Facebook. We'll put the links up to the show and everything too. But we're so excited to have you here, and I want to get started and just ask you why do you do what you do? Why is this so important to you that the world know about all this sugar stuff?
You know, it's interesting. I've never not done this, even when I was a little kid. I started, getting into nutrition and health when I was an early teen. But the last couple of years really changed everything for me. I mean, I always loved the whole field of weight loss because I saw how wrong we were approaching it. But then when my son got hit by the car, and I don't know if you've been following on Facebook, this was a couple years ago. My son was the victim of a hit and run. He was crossing the street, 16 years old, at dusk, and a woman going 40 miles an hour ran him down and then got out of her car, gasped, and drove off. Like a stunning thing you can't imagine. And a good Samaritan pulled over and called 911, blocked him from getting hit. They airlifted him to the local hospital. They told us to let him go. They said he's too far gone. He said it's a torn aorta, multiple brain bleeds. If we fix the torn aorta here, his brain will bleed out. If we don't fix the torn aorta, it's going to rupture, and it's too risky to fly him anywhere. And I'm like, but he's going to die here, so what's the risk? You know, like what risk? You know, so we overruled them and moved him to Harbor UCLA. They saved his life. But I literally launched my first New York Times bestseller from the ICU with my son in a coma. And when your kid's in the hospital, when you've got a loved one in the hospital, anyone who's had this happen knows, if you are not there, bad stuff happens. And, you have to be there all the time. So literally, I would get up at 5 in the morning. I had to move over there because it was 2.5 hours from my house. So I was living in a hotel, driving to the hospital 5:30 in the morning because I wanted to be there for their grand rounds. And they go really early, I think, to avoid people. And then I'd get back home around 8:39 to the hotel, go to sleep, get up, do it again. I was running the stairs at the hospital. I was having people were bringing me food from Whole Foods. But, you know, you can't get sick when your son's in the ICU. They don't let you in there. So you look at it, and I had to make my book work because I'm the primary financial support for my kids. And now I have a kid, you know, I mean, major medical bills. And I had to do all of it. And there was no time for poor focus, poor energy, making life-changing decisions, you know, on a daily basis. And it just made me realize that, you know, I'd been focusing on more energy and losing weight. And I went, you know, this really comes down to you never know when something like this is going to happen or some amazing opportunity is going to happen, and are you ready? Or is your health holding you back? And is it holding you back because of simple little decisions you make every day that you could make a little shift and, you know, switch out the gluten for something else or lower your sugar impact that you actually wouldn't even miss after a couple of days and totally change your life and be able to be there for things like this that could happen?
Well, you know, as a doctor, as an MD, it's probably strange for me to say it, but I agree with you that oftentimes the last place you want to be when you're sick is in a hospital. A lot goes wrong, a lot of mistakes are made, a lot of infections show up, you know, and just by being in that environment. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, okay, I'm a sugar addict. Help me. What can I do?
And hey, you know, hospital saved my son's life, but then you do need to be, you know, you want to get him out as soon as possible. They stay in a coma in the hospital. Yeah, I mean, he had infections from his tube and all sorts of stuff. It's interesting. When I looked at this question, and what happened was I wrote The Virgin Diet, and the number one question I got asked from that book was about sugar. And I found that people fell into two camps, and sometimes it was either or worship both. Is they were either confused by it, you know, they thought, but I'm eating all natural, it's honey, it's maple syrup, right, it's coconut sugar, it's okay, or they were controlled by it. They knew that they needed to cut the sugar out, but they just couldn't do it. And both of those are a problem. And so what I set out to do was to get rid of the confusion. We've really been looking at sugar all wrong, and that's set this problem up, but also help people get back the control over sugar. I set out to prove that I could help someone get rid of their sweet tooth in literally 2 weeks or less. That was the hypothesis I started this whole thing with, and it worked. And that's so important because, you know, as long as you're trying to fight willpower, I think you're always set up to lose. You know, we were not put on this earth to have willpower. Otherwise, you know, there'd be no people around. So, you know, battling your willpower is crazy. But if you lose your sweet tooth, which I believe you can do, I've proven it. When I first wrote the book, I did a pilot test with 700 people, and that was the number one thing that happened in 2 weeks. The average person lost 10 pounds, they lost 2 inches off their waist, and they lost their sweet tooth for good. Like sweet food tasted gross, you know.
Wow.
Big difference. Yes. Yes, huge.
You know, we share something in common. I wrote most of my book when my dad was in the hospital. He's a stroke survivor, and you're so right. I just want to reiterate something you said off the sugar point for a minute, and that you need to be in the hospital all the time or things happen. Wow. But I have a question kind of related to that. How does sugar affect your mood and your energy and your ability to stay positive in a horrible situation, to get up and be there every day, all those things? How does your health help you do that? That's the first part of that. And then also, when you're in that situation of being the person in the health crisis, how does taking care of your health in that way, as you start to recover, how does all this help all of that situation? Because there's a lot of people in pain in a variety of different ways right now.
So, okay, you threw a bunch of ones out. Start
oh,
with.
Yeah. The first part is
like, okay, wait a minute.
How does sugar and everything affect everything that you're able to do? In other words, you know, keep going. Yeah, just, you got it.
You know, there was this little study that just came out, and you know, these things make me crazy. So I Google alert sugar, and every day I read what's coming out about sugar. And the latest one is sugar helps you handle stress. And I'm like, oh no, you know, no. You know, it's like, yes, you can have some soda and it will lower your stress hormones. I'm like, oh my God, you've missed the point. So the challenge is sugar initially, of course, will drive serotonin into the brain, which makes you feel better. It will drive up your blood sugar, which makes you feel a little energetic, you know, may temporarily lower stress hormones. And so immediately when you feel it, you feel pretty good. But that's short-lived, as we know. And so if you do that over time, first of all, your body gets dependent on sugar, not stored body fat as your fuel source, and dependent on using that exogenously as your way to have, you know, keep your energy up, keep your focus up, and it's short-lived. So you're up and down and up and down and up and down. But the other side of that, that's the short term. The short term is, you know, all of a sudden now you don't have good focus, you don't have good mood, you don't have great energy, gas and bloating, but then you start to see that it creates an inflammatory response, it creates insulin resistance. I mean, there's 70 different diseases, including the big players like diabetes, heart disease, cancer, that all have their links.
On top of that. Like, add one more thing to that. Like, go into, I'm trying to talk about the person who's already kind of got those things and then they have a crisis and how they're able to...
That's the challenge. You know, I mean, you want to make sure, like I look at my son, and had my son not been in good health when the car ran him down, you know, he wouldn't be here. He was strong, he was healthy, he was fit, he was in good shape. If he'd been, you know, not that case, no way would he have been able to recover. He was also on a lot of fish oil when the car hit him, and that pre and then, of course, after the fact are big ways we've brought him back. But, you know, you never know when something's going to happen. And the easiest way that I've seen to start to reclaim your health is to lower your sugar impact. And it doesn't mean that you go cold turkey. I think that's the biggest mistake we make out there, is that people have this idea that in order to do something, you know, it's all or nothing, and we have to, all of this has to go away today. And if you accept the fact that the number one drug worldwide is sugar, and it is clear that it's a drug, and it is clear that it's addictive, and it is clear that it is the number one drug of choice. I mean, it's like the stats all show it, right? And if you accept that, you would never tell someone to live in the world surrounded by it and go cold turkey. That would be silly. It wouldn't make any sense. So unless you can put them in a rehab center for it, you just taper down, and you can make a big shift. And literally, it's pretty easy to do. It's just that we've been doing this wrong, so we don't understand all the places sugar is sneaking in. So we think we're taking sugar out of our diet, and then we're having this marinara sauce. The fat-free dressing's got, it's got a teaspoon of sugar per tablespoon of dressing. We've got the green drink, that the green smoothie cleanse, and it's got, you know, 6 servings of fruits in it. It's, you know, it's, we're being bombarded by it.
One of the sugars that I always try and steer people away from is anything artificial. Do you think those are good or bad? And why? Because people think, oh, well, yeah, I'll give up sugar and just eat everything sugar-free. Sugar-free soda, sugar-free yogurt, sugar-free ice cream,
I think artificial sweeteners are the worst chemistry experiment that we have done to us. They are this just ridiculous, stupid. They don't work. It makes no sense at all to me whatsoever. So here's why. Number one, when you eat sweet, what do you want?
When you eat, say that again?
I don't eat
much sugar, so.
No, sure. That's not, hypothetical. Hypothetical.
Oh.
If someone eats sweet, what do they want?
Water, I would think. Water.
No, they want
salt,
more sweet.
Or more sugar,
So the more sweet you eat, the more sweet you want. So when you're using artificial sweeteners, you actually just wake up your sweet tooth and dull it, because it's sweeter, sweeter, sweeter. So all of a sudden, you know, you're wanting progressively sweeter and sweeter food. In fact, there's a gene that makes you the sweet taster gene, and the more sweet you eat, the more sweet you want. So there's that part of it. There's the part where it messes up your gut microbiome and actually feeds the bad bacteria in your gut. and that makes you hungrier and better at storing fat. Then there's also glycation. It goes through glycation just like normal sugars does, which is the most aging thing that you can do to your body is glycate. It's where sugars bind with proteins without using enzymes, and they make you wrinkle and brown spots and inflamed. So they do that. They also cause calorie dysregulation, which means that you lose the ability to correlate the degree of sweetness with the amount of sugar that you're eating, with the amount of food that you're eating, so you tend to overeat. And then there's also the impact on insulin, because even though they're not supposedly they don't have any calories, remember, it's the impact the sugar has on your body, and if these things are raising insulin, then they're telling your body to store fat, not burn it. So the studies are showing that people who use more artificial sweeteners have higher risk of diabetes and bigger waist circumference and gain more weight. So clearly, what we set out to use them for is not working.
Yeah. I know, obviously, it's better to have fruit than a candy bar, but is the sugar in fruit a problem?
So here's the deal. When I looked at creating the whole sugar impact scale, because we've been looking at sugar all wrong. We've been looking at sugar and in terms of glycemic index, how much a 50-gram dose of a food raises blood sugar, which works fine if you're looking at a potato, but doesn't really make any sense with carrots, and we also don't eat food in isolation. So what I look at instead is how much something raises your blood sugar and insulin, how much fructose something has, and then contrast that with nutrient density and fiber. So fructose is the primary sugar in fruit. There's also, of course, glucose, but it's got fiber and nutrient density. The challenge is when you condense that, like fruit juice concentrate, when you pull it out, like juice, when you dry it, like dried fruit, you know, or you use it in processed foods, like high fructose corn syrup is still pretty much like table sugar. I mean, it's half glucose, half fructose, but the fructose is handled differently than any other sugar is in the body. Basically, all carbs are going to turn to sugar except for fiber, and there's either fructose or everything else, because everything else is going to end up as glucose. Fructose might too, but fructose goes straight to the liver. It's the only organ that can metabolize it. As it's going there, it bypasses triggering any satiety signals because it doesn't raise blood sugar. We thought that was a good thing, but actually it makes you more insulin resistant. It can lead to diabetes and hypertension. It's more aging than any other sugar, more inflammatory, feeds the worst cancers. But before it even starts doing that, it goes straight to the liver, tells your body to make fat, and you're still hungry while you're doing it. So one or two pieces of fruit a day, especially low sugar impact ones like berries, okay. But apple juice, which has more fructose than a Coke, or dried fruit, or these green drinks that have, you know, there's one green drink out there that's 16 ounces and 56 grams of sugar, more than the soda counterpart, and 5 servings of fruits in it. I tell people fruit is not free food. 1 or 2 servings a day, fine, but this isn't the, oh, I'll have dessert, I'll just have, you know, a pound of cherries, right? You know, I think people have this idea that this is just, because we put fruit on the USDA My Plate as 5 servings of fruit and vegetables, it's like we say kale is like a banana, which is ridiculous.
I'm gonna give you a sample of like what I would envision could be like the worst thing that you could eat all day long, or something. And when I get done, just explain to our listeners what's wrong with this. So let's say I get up in the morning and I have a glass of apple juice, 2 Pop-Tarts, an egg, and some blueberries and some frosted flakes or something. You know, I just totally binge eating sugar when I get up. Then I don't eat a snack or anything like that, or I might have a yogurt or something like that. At lunch, I go out to eat, and I have a giant bowl of pasta with breadsticks, and while I'm there, I drink 4 Diet Cokes. Then later on in the afternoon, I think, okay, cool, I'm hungry again, I'm going to have another yogurt. And then for dinner, I come home at 7 o'clock, I start making dinner, I eat it at 8:30, and I have a giant steak, a baked potato, corn, a little bit of a salad smothered in ranch dressing with cheese on top, and some more Diet Coke, and then at the end of the night, I have a bowl of ice cream before I go to bed. How am I doing?
So, you know, part of what I show in my public television show is what the typical person eats throughout the day, thinking. I think the bigger one is the people thinking they're doing well, like they have the bowl of Special K with skim milk and sliced bananas and a glass of juice for breakfast, and they think they did a good job because it's low fat and the milk was fat-free, which means they pulled all the fat out, all you're left with is your sugar, you know. So they had this high-carb, fat-free breakfast that's basically the equivalent of 4 ice cream cones. And then, yes, they go to lunch and they have the salad because the salad's healthier, right? And they get the fat-free dressing, which, of course, has a teaspoon of sugar per tablespoon of dressing. It had glazed walnuts and dried fruit, but, hey, it's a salad. And they don't realize that, you know, between the teriyaki chicken and the glazed nuts and the dried fruit and the sugar-free, the fat-free salad dressing, that they just turned their salad into a sundae, a couple more ice cream cones. Then they, you know, are worried about their bones, so they have a fat-free yogurt as a snack, because they've also been told they need to eat every 2 to 3 hours, right?
Yes.
And they have to because they've turned their body into a sugar machine, and so if they don't eat every 2 to 3 hours, they crash. And so they have that fat-free yogurt, which is great. It's fat-free, so it's totally fine. But, you know, you can have a fat-free yogurt. I've got one in the fridge that I use for food porn. We'd never eat it here. 26 grams of sugar in it. It's got more sugar than ice cream, the same amount. And then dinner, you know, they're going to, again, same thing, just like you described, they'll have the pasta, but it's whole wheat. Not realizing things like whole wheat bread, actually 2 pieces of whole wheat bread raise your blood sugar more than 6 teaspoons of sugar do. So this whole it's whole wheat thing is kind of bogus. As we know, gluten is very insulin producing and very inflammatory and very addictive. Like the ultimate addictive trifecta is gluten, dairy, and sugar, massive opiate hit on the brain. So you have that for dinner, and big carb hit, big marinara. They probably just bought a regular marinara in the store. Where why they needed to add more sugar to tomatoes, not sure, but, you know, there's sugar in that too. And then a salad with balsamic vinaigrette. Balsamic vinaigrette. Balsamic vinegar is just syrup. So what you've described is very typical. And
don't forget my ice cream before I go to bed. Put
yeah,
some whipped cream on it.
Because you deserve it, because you had a hard day.
I had a terrible day, yeah.
Had a hard day, so I deserve it. It's my only time, and for so many women, it's the only time to themselves, and they're just going to have a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. And the worst thing is to eat right before bed. You know, one of the big things research shows is 12 to 14 hours of an overnight fast is hugely important because it allows insulin to come down to normal, growth hormone to come up. You know, you can burn more fat, but that little ice cream before bed, oh my gosh, that's going to let you crash and burn and get hypoglycemic at 2 or 3 and keep your ghrelin suppressed so that you can't raise growth hormone. All sorts of issues with that. But I think the bigger challenge is when people are doing these things thinking they're doing well, picking the fat-free dressing, picking the low-fat ice cream or the frozen yogurt, you know, and or just having you know, some biscotti or a whole grain muffin, all these things that pose as health foods that are anything but. It's really
especially
what's
for somebody who's like already diabetic. Like I cringe sometimes when I see somebody diabetic who's like, okay, well, I'm going to eat the sugar free yogurt and the sugar free ice cream and the whatever it is because it's and have diet sodas too, and I'm diabetic. Freaks me
out.
Yeah,
and the diet. You know, the artificial sweeteners with diabetics is the craziest part of all. Because,
yeah.
I mean, the studies just, I mean, it's just crazy stuff. It's crazy. So there's just such a disconnect, and there's still a disconnect. The whole calories in, calories out model that will not crash and burn, you know, that makes me crazy, that I've been 15 years, I've been sitting here saying, you know, we got to, it's not about the calories. I mean, sure, you know, you can't eat way excess, but the studies clearly show it's calories count, it's where they come from that counts more, and it's really the hormonal effect of these foods on your body. Is it telling you to store fat or burn it, right? Have great energy or crash and burn, age faster, age slower. And when you eat correctly, you don't have to worry about calories. You aren't hungry. It just becomes a non-issue. I mean, I don't ever go through the day and think about how many calories I had. Ever.
Yeah.
Like, just never.
I don't know if my math's good enough for that.
Yeah, I mean, who the heck? I was just reading. I always have to do this to torture myself. So I picked up, I don't know, it was like a People or a Today, some little rag magazine about, you know, how the stars are losing weight. And I'm like, why do I do this to myself? Why do I turn? And the worst part is people are going to look at that and take the advice of people. You know, one of the challenges is in our world is that there's an assumption out there that if you eat, that you are a nutritionist and therefore qualified to give nutrition information. I can't tell you how often someone will say, well, I was told I should never have X, Y, or Z, or I should eat all this. And I'll go, well, where did you hear that? And they'll go, oh, my manicurist. Like, well, that, what? You know? Right?
It's funny. Yeah, no, that's so true. Or somebody who lost a bunch of weight, what did they do? Or what? I mean, everybody's so different. But I guess we have a tweet coming in, and the question is, okay, so what should I eat?
Number one question I get asked is, what should I eat? All right. And here's the thing. So what I teach people to do on the Sugar Impact Diet is add before they take away. So the first part of the program, after you test to kind of check in where you are with in terms of your sugar impact and you do a sneaky sugar inventory to find out how much sugar is sneaking into your diet, is we go through then and we start to taper. And the first thing I have people do is add before they take away. I find a lot of people are overdoing sugar and carbs because they're not getting enough healthy fats and protein in. And I'm happy to see that I think we're starting to make this shift now into people like not being fat phobic. That is just one of the reason we have the sugar problems we do is because a couple decades ago there was a big argument between two researchers. One, Ansel Keys, said that fat was making us have heart disease, and one, John Yudkin, brilliant guy, said it was the sugar, and Ansel Keys won, and the fat-free craze happened, and sugar came in and fat came out. And I feel like we're finally getting back to where we should be, which is a higher fat diet. My diet is 50% or higher in fat. And when you're eating good, healthy fats and you get good, clean, lean protein, you don't crave sugar because your brain can make the chemicals it needs to stay balanced, serotonin and dopamine. And the healthy fats help you keep fuller longer. So things like, you know, for protein, wild fish and grass-fed beef and pastured pork and lamb and pastured chicken. And I do defatted beef protein shakes and pea protein shakes. So those are good, clean protein sources, healthy fats, avocado, the wild fish, of course, counts in there too, raw nuts and seeds, coconut. This morning I did a shake with defatted beef protein and pea protein. I mixed my two different shake mixes. I threw in chia seeds. I threw in extra fiber. I threw in avocado and coconut milk. And that was it. And it's delicious. And I threw in a spoonful of nut butter. So, I mean, I had fat from the coconut milk, the nut butter, the chia seeds, the avocado. Loads of fat.
Wow.
Yes. So
I want you to know we have a ginormous food allergy audience. I've had anaphylaxis to nuts and peanuts and fish and shellfish for almost 20 years now, and I got them after my second pregnancy. And so one of the challenges I always ask. One of the things I always ask people when they come on the show, just because our food allergy audience is so tuned into these shows when we do shows on healthy, clean eating, food, nutrition, that type of thing, is when you can't eat nut butter or chia seeds or coconut milk or all those things, where do you get your fat from, if it's a necessary thing, or your protein from? Can you help us with that a little bit? Because let's say you want to kind of go vegan, but then your choices are, you know, like almonds or nut butter or something like that. It puts you like in this circle of you can't get out of it.
Well, so, you know, I mean, I wrote the book on food intolerance called The Virgin Diet, and then I wrote I have the Sugar Impact Diet. And in both those programs, I also have a specific plan for vegans, a specific plan for paleo. I always say I don't want to die on that hill. Because it seems like, you know, both those groups tend to go way, way over the top on whichever way they're going. So I'm like,
yeah.
Whichever way you want to go, I'm staying out of it. I'm over here. So I give them their plans. The challenge is, you know, especially in the vegan diet, it's going to be very hard to keep your sugar impact down and get what you need, and especially if you can't eat nuts and seeds. And so, you know, I always question people in whatever diet they're doing, why are you doing it, and is this the healthiest choice for your body? So that's the first part. Because there's plenty of healthy fats out there for people. It's just, but if you're going to go vegan, like there's another diet out there that's low fat vegan. I'm like, that's the worst diet I could ever imagine because it's a high carb diet. So if you're doing a low fat vegan diet, I would, you know, this doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I have no idea why someone would do that. But, you know, with food intolerances, you just got to pull out the things that don't work for you and then find other options. There's a ton of healthy fats out there. You know, if you eat dairy, ghee is one of the most amazing. Grass-fed ghee is incredible. Macadamia nut oil, if you can do nuts, is amazing. Red palm fruit oil is another good one. You know, of course, avocado. So it just depends. I mean, there's a whole array, and then you have to, because people write me and go, well, I can't do nuts. I'm like, well, don't do nuts. You know, then don't do nuts. Just do these.
Well,
do the other ones over here.
Yeah, that's funny.
But I always
think
you're restrictive
not,
diet.
You're not, oh, sorry.
I mean, I look at restrictive diets, and I always want to question with someone as to why, you know, why are they there? What is the outcome they're looking from that, you know? Is it a religious thing? Is it a health thing? What is the reason behind it, and is it really substantiated for the choices you're making? Because sometimes it's not.
Yeah, I found that through managing my food allergies and so forth, I definitely got so much healthier when I nixed sugar about 4 years ago. I think I had my head in the chocolate bag, literally, like just mindlessly eating chocolate. I'm 46, almost 46, and it was just like, okay, we're going to eat chocolate. No idea why, but it was just like sugar, 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 all of a sudden with hormones changing and everything.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, and
those
that's
hormones.
A really big deal.
Yes, it is. I'm 52. It is a big deal.
You know, getting off of sugar, should you go cold turkey on it or what?
No, hang on.
Never.
Go back to why it's a big deal for sugar in your 40s and 50s. Go back to that.
Well, so here's why it's such a big deal. It's all, I think, as you're moving into hormonal shifts, women in your 40s and 50s, men, it's happening younger. It used to be later in their 50s, but really 40s, 50s too. It's all about your adrenal health. It's all about managing stress. And to me, one of the most, you know, stressful things you can do to your body is eat a high sugar impact diet. So when you look at moving into really good hormonal health, the place you start is with balancing your diet, keeping your insulin level, keeping your blood sugar level, supporting good healthy adrenals that you're going to have to rely on as you go through menopause and andropause. So, you know, having now, I'm 52, so I'm like, you know, in that war. This is all that matters there is start with your adrenals and a good healthy diet. You want to do everything you possibly can going into it, and ideally the sooner you start, the better.
Yeah. Okay, Walter, what were you saying? What happens if you, oh, what happened to me when I quit chocolate?
No, I just
the answer is you get the shake. If you really want to know.
Practically speaking, like, how should I, like, you know, get rid of this addiction to sugar? What's the best way to do it? I mean, get rid of snacks, get rid of the whole deal, or go slowly?
So I have a three-step process. I mean, I call it the four T's because I start with testing, but then it's taper, transition, transform. So the first thing I have people do, again, is add before they take away. So they're bringing in clean, lean protein. And again, I have options for vegan or paleo or anywhere in between. They're bringing in healthy fats. They're eating a lot of non-starchy vegetables and then some what I call slow, low carbs, wild rice, quinoa, pumpkins, berries. So that's step one. And as you're going through that the tapering phase and you're adding and making sure that you're getting in those things at each meal and you're getting lots of water in between each meals, you're tapering down from high sugar impact foods to medium sugar impact foods. So if you were eating a potato, you switch to a sweet potato. If you were doing white rice, you switch to brown rice. If you were doing raisins, you switch to grapes. So simple little swaps. So you don't even miss the foods that start to lower your sugar impact. But again, you're adding in protein, you're making sure you get enough fat. And then you do that for a week or two, depending on your results on the sugar impact quiz. Someone who's more metabolically damaged, say they're diabetic, insulin resistant, they've got elevated cholesterol, whatever their issues are, someone who's got more of those issues might take 2 weeks to do the transition. It doesn't matter because it's not a race. And that the tapering part's really what sets you up for success. can't skip that. Once you've done that, you move into really what's a detox or a reset. I call it the transition phase because it's where you're transitioning from relying on sugar as your primary fuel source to fat. And so what I do here, and this is what changes everything. And when I read about it and looked at the biochemistry of it, I knew this would work. But I ran it on myself, I ran it on my team, and then I ran 700 people through it, and then I went, this is like crazy how well this works, because I wanted to help people reclaim their sugar sensitivity so they could really taste sweet again and get good at using fat for fuel. So what I do for 2 weeks is I take fructose out entirely, because it turns out that the more fructose you eat, the better your body gets at getting it straight to the liver, where it's stored as fat. So you do not want to be good at that, because you elevate something called GLUT5 transport system. This is not a goal. We don't want to get good at transporting fructose to the liver and making fat and being hungry. That's a bad thing. So it turns out that while if you eat a lot of fructose, you get really good at it, at transporting it. If you don't, you get really bad at it. So that shift happens very quickly, and since fructose is super sweet, that's why we're using it more and things. And by the way, if anyone listening thinks agave is a health food, it's the highest fructose food out there. So for 2 weeks, I take fructose down to zero. We go to all low sugar impact foods. So if you were doing wild rice or brown rice, you do wild rice. If you were doing a sweet potato, you do a pumpkin. We take it all down, tons of easy recipes, and at the end of those 2 weeks, the average person's lost 10 pounds, they lost 2 inches off their waist, but they lost their sweet tooth, which is really cool. Then I take a week, and I think this is the most critical thing, because, you know, what's happened at this point is you've done a reset. You can taste sweet foods again. They don't taste good. People tell me they just taste gross. So you've gone through that reset phase, but what's so critical here is to notice now, take some time and check in with, how do you feel when you eat this way? So I have people start adding back some medium sugar impact foods and then do a trial on a high sugar impact food. So maybe they'll go have a couple pieces of wheat bread or a white potato or some ice cream, and then check in on your energy, your gas and bloating, your focus, your mood, your weight, your blood sugar. I had one gal who, her blood sugar was always on glucophage. She was up at 140. She could never get it controlled down below that. She went on the programs. In the reset cycle, she brought it down. It was sitting at 90, no issues. Then she went back and she started to connect the dots with different foods, and boom, went up to 117. She now can control her blood sugar at 90, no issues, where she never was able to do that before, even though she was following more of a, you know, diabetic type of diet. So.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, and let me just talk for a second about what happens if you decide to go cold turkey, because I kind of have a switch. It goes on or off with stuff. A lot of the times I can just be like, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore or whatever. And I was eating chocolate, and I was like, this is stupid. What am I doing? And I stopped, and I literally had headaches. I was shaking like a drug addict, sweating. It was crazy what I went through to pull myself off of chocolate, not knowing all the things that you just said. So for somebody who's like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to drink soda anymore. Like my mom, she was drinking like, I don't know how many cans of soda a day, and I said, well, wean yourself off. She's got that same thing. She's like, I'll just stop. She got migraines and terrible things.
Yeah.
But eventually lost 25 pounds just by not drinking soda.
Wow.
But think if she just tapered it down, you know, it's like you don't have to go, you don't have to do this. Like it doesn't have to be painful like that. You just, if you taper it down, it takes a week at the most, you know, sometimes 2 weeks, but you don't have any of those horrible side effects. And I've had literally people say, well, I went on this and next I had to go race to the soda machine, you know, because they just couldn't take it. I was like, you just, it doesn't need to be hard. You don't have to be mean to yourself, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of us are mean to ourselves, because you're sitting there, you know, you look in the mirror and you're like, oh, I'm fat, I'm old, I'm this and that. And, you know, you just, by the end of it, you know, by the end of 2 minutes with yourself in a mirror, you've just completely obliterated your whole being. So, and we're, women especially, we're masters at doing that to ourselves.
Yeah, I use the scale to beat myself up.
Dr. Walls. J.D., do you teach people the thinking and the positive thinking and so forth that kind of goes with this also?
You know, it's interesting. I speak at a lot of medical conferences, and the next one I just decided I wanted to do something very different. I've decided that I'm going to do Making Success Stick, because really, and my next book is much more on mindset stuff. You know, the information's out there. The strategies are out there. Now, granted, I see a lot of the wrong strategies out there, but still, you know, here's the book. What's the difference between someone who takes the Sugar Impact Diet book or the Virgin Diet book and has success versus the person who takes the book and puts it on the shelf, right?
Yeah, what is that?
What is the difference? I think it starts here. First of all, it starts with the desire to get real inspired goals and the belief that you can do this. If you don't believe you can do it, then the book's going on the shelf. So you've got to believe in yourself. You've got to love yourself. You've got to want it. And then you've got to have a goal. You know, I was on Dr. Phil for a couple of years, and he always called it the get real goal. And I don't think it's their get real goal, because he'd say, you know, you can't be who you were back in high school. I'm like, well, what if you could be better? What if, like, let's do a get real inspired goal that you can be better than you've ever been in your life, right? That's the goal I'm looking for.
That's
is what's that
one.
Goal that's going to, you know, I don't want to keep you up at night, but, you know, but what is that goal that gets you excited again, that makes you, like, because for so many of us, we're just kind of walking through in a fugue state, right? So what's that big goal? And now here's the key, and this is where everything changes. And I still remember, because I was standing next to my son holding his hand, and he was in a coma with the, you know, the all the beeps and breathing and, you know, terrible. And I still remember standing in the ICU listening to all the sounds and seeing all the tubes and thinking, this is the best thing that's ever happened to him. That's my shift. And I think, you know, the first thing, and I told everybody, so the first thing I think you do is get a goal. And then, and by the way, people who get a goal and write it down are 40% more likely to get that goal to happen than people who don't. So what an obvious first step, right? Get goal, write it down. You want to double your odds? Tell other people. When you tell other people, you then have an 80% more likely chance of it happening. So that's the first step, is do that. Now, here's how you get successful on a program. You journal. People who journal are twice as successful as people who don't journal. So you set some big, fun stretch goals. You wrote them down, you share them with a friend, and then you start to journal what you're eating and any lifestyle habits that you want to do and change. I will tell you, and the more you can get in community, hire a coach, have a support group. All my programs, I have communities, support groups, coaches, all involved. And the more you can do that, the better. I mean, I think that's the big secret to success. And I have amazing coaches I personally work with. I don't recommend anything I don't do myself, and I work with coaches. And one of my coaches, he's my entrepreneurial coach, talks about this cycle, and I think it applies to everything. His name's Dan Sullivan of Strategic Coach. And, you know, I've always gone out, I love that quote that says, do one thing a day that scares you. And when I'm not in that mode of something being scary to me, I know I'm not growing. And then I sit there and go, what can it be, you know? And so he gave me the cycle, and I went, well, that explains all of it. And he says, okay, it starts with a commitment. So let's say you say, you know what, I want to go be a public speaker, but my weight's holding me back, I lack self-confidence, so my first goal is to lose 50 pounds. The minute you do that, and you voice that, because, again, you're going to say it, you're going to write it down. I write my goals every single day in my journal. Every day I write them down, and I tell other people. So you say it. You tell other people, you're writing it down, you're going to get scared the minute you do that. That's a good thing, because it turns out that when you make a commitment that is a stretch commitment, it's going to require courage to go after the new capabilities that you need to reach that goal. So you get scared, requires you to step up, have some courage, you go get the new capabilities, the new skill set, whatever it is you need to reach that. When you reach that, you've got confidence. And that bigger confidence then allows you to go to the next bigger commitment. And it becomes just this amazing, cool cycle where you just, instead of most people kind of going through life and playing smaller and smaller and becoming more scarcity-minded and more limited, it's just the opposite of being more abundant, bigger, more confident, making a bigger impact on the world, because that's what we are put here to do. We weren't put here today to count our calories and, you know, stress over you know, our waistline. I'm pretty sure, right?
I think some of us are convinced we are, though.
I have a question that kind of a segue to your second book, but it also ties into staying with your diet. First, by the way, let me just say this whole success paradigm you just gave was brilliant and it works across the board for anything. You're right, whether it's a food or success or money or relationships, you know, this whole goal setting is great. But I want to ask you, because earlier you said, okay, switch from a sweet potato to pumpkin in this transition. And so for me, it's like, but pumpkin, I don't know how to cook pumpkin that I'm going to want to eat it. And you have this book about recipes. So is that how this works, that if you learn how to cook this right, then you can make the transition and stay with it?
Well, first of all, I have my next book coming out is the cookbook, May 26th, which we're doing a really fun live cookathon in a week. And my book has recipes. But I got to tell you, all this stuff's so easy to do. There's no difference between, baking pumpkin and baking a potato. It's just we're just not used to doing it. I think one of the most, we're not used to being in the kitchen anymore. I'm sort of the queen of, like, what can I assemble in there? How quickly can I put foods together? And it really comes down to stocking your pantry, fridge, and freezer correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, it becomes very easy, right? Because then you just have your stuff in there, and literally anything that I put, I can do a meal in 30 minutes or less. You just have to have the right stuff in your pantry, in your fridge, and your freezer to do so. And by the way, one of the biggest urban legends out there that doesn't seem to ever want to die, that's so crazy, is that it costs more to eat healthy. Because it actually, when I went to the store and I bought 2 grocery carts worth of food, my grocery cart of what I normally eat versus what a typical family ate, and I was stocking carts to see, was $38 less.
Wow. Well, you guys, you can hear me typing in the background. We're getting a lot of tweets and so forth. I don't think I'm going to be able to take all of your questions because we're going to run out of time, and we've covered a lot of what you're asking, but I just want to remind everybody that we're on the phone here with J.J. Virgin, and can we just talk about all of your different books for a little bit and talk about the book that you have out right now and then the one that's coming out in May, because a cookbook would be a fabulous thing for all of us. Can't wait for that one.
Well, that's why we always do things that people ask for. I've just decided that's the way to do it. You know, if someone says, I need this, and everyone always asks, what should I eat, and then wants more recipes. So that's how we put it together. So I started with, way back when, I did 6 weeks to Sleeveless and Sexy because I kept getting asked about my arms. So I was like, okay. So did 6 weeks to Sleeveless and Sexy, and then the biggest thing that I was out talking about was food intolerance. Because I'd been working in doctor's offices for years, doing food intolerance testing. The same foods always showed up. When we pulled them out, it was crazy how quickly people lost the inflammation. Their skin cleared up. They lost weight. Amazing. And it wasn't that all of these 7 foods were necessarily the problem, but it was always at least a couple of them. So I created a very simple elimination diet program for people called the Virgin Diet. And then, of course, people wanted recipes, so we did the cookbook. But the big question got asked about sugar, so then I did the sugar impact diet because I knew we'd been looking at sugar all wrong, and I wanted to create a new framework for looking at sugar that was so easy to put into practice. And so I created these scales, and I rate foods low, medium, and high sugar impact, and all you really have to do is, you know, taper from high to medium, then medium to low, and then figure out where you need to live. That's the third cycle. Like, where do you do best? Most people do best with low sugar impact, knowing when they can put the mediums in. And so now we have the Sugar Impact Diet cookbook coming out. And then in a couple of years, I'm bringing out my story of what it was like to the life-changing lessons that happen when you, when your son is left for dead in the street, and you have to bring him back. So that's going to be the last one.
Walter, are you there?
Oh yeah, yeah. I wanted
okay,
to hear
you're quiet today. You're so quiet today.
There's just so much. I don't even know how to approach which thing to ask. But about your recipes that's coming up, because I need to get in the kitchen more, because I think that's how I screw up, because I'm just running around a lot, and so I grab stuff. And if I'm in the kitchen, I got some recipes that I can do things. So like you talk about, like coconut oil and cauliflower and quinoa and things. Can you just give us a little bit about these foods and how to use them or whatever?
Well, I have a bunch of my favorite foods out there. I think every nutritionist has the ones that they like the best. And I think things like, you know, I love wild rice of any of those things, because it's actually a grass, not a grain, just like quinoa is a seed, not a grain. These are things that you make, if you can make in your fridge and make with a little veggie broth or chicken broth and leave them in there, it's so easy to do a stir fry with them, do, you know, a chipotle style bowl where you throw that on the bottom and add some vegetables and chicken and guacamole and salsa. You know, they're just good foundational foods. So I always have lentils, garbanzo beans or black beans or quinoa or some cooked up. I love kabocha squash, which is it's a Japanese pumpkin. It's amazing. Or some butternut squash. I always have some of that in the fridge as a slow, low carb that you can grab. You can throw it into a salad. And I always keep a bunch of salad greens in the fridge too, some arugula and kale. And I always I massage kale before I put it in salad, which is an important thing to do, because otherwise it's really bitter. So all you have to do is put some olive oil on your hands and rub it, or some macadamia nut oil. I'd say my favorite oils, macadamia nut oil is my favorite oil of all oils. It is absolutely delicious. Macadamia nut is an amazing food. You can cook with it at higher heats, but it makes just an incredible salad dressing. But you can also roast vegetables with it, which is incredible too. And so, you know, for a lot of these things, they're so easy to do. It's easy to roast vegetables or roast squash. It's easy to boil up some quinoa or wild rice with a little broth. And it's just kind of learning these things. And once you do, you realize how much time you actually save versus, you know, and money versus going out to eat or grabbing stuff that's prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you've got total control over what went into your food, which is hugely important.
Definitely. Can we talk about stress before we go? Just a quick nibble on the whole stress thing, because stress, belly fat, cortisol, all those things. Talk about sugar as it goes with all of that. Because I still don't think people quite get it.
Well, you know, if you can look at one thing, and unfortunately it's not very sexy. And I really wanted to write a book about is stress making you age faster, you know, fat, old, and lose your sex drive, because those are the things it does. And one of the big things it does is make you crave sugar. But stress in itself, and that's why it's so important to look past calories and look at your lifestyle, because there's a great little, Glamour did this great little project with my buddy Dr. Michael Bruce, the sleep doctor, and all they did was take a group of women and had them sleep more. These were women sleeping 6 hours a night. I think they had them sleep 8 to 9 hours a night, and they all lost weight. And that's one of the fastest ways to start lowering your stress hormones is to get better sleep. It improves your insulin sensitivity. But, you know, when you look at it, we've got to look beyond just calories and look at, if you're stressed out, you're going to have higher fasting blood sugar. If you have higher fasting blood sugar, you have higher insulin, you won't be able to use stored fat for fuel. If you're eating carbohydrates or sugar, because both are the same, what you really want to do with your body is teach your body to make sugar slowly from the slow, low carbs you're eating, like quinoa and pumpkins and wild rice, not mainline it from things like, you know, muffins and juice and stuff like that. And if you are doing the mainlining, you're constantly keeping your blood sugar up and your insulin up. If your insulin's up, it's driving your blood sugar back down, so you crash and have to do it again. It's very catabolic. It's going to, you know, strip your body of nutrients over time, raise your stress hormones, and lower your serotonin and make you dependent on it. So all of this stuff I look at as, most of us are kind of in this stress-driven world where we're used to undersleeping, going, too much caffeine, too much carbohydrates and sugar, and you want to shift it back the other way. But again, that's why we taper and we don't do it overnight, right? So you start And I don't believe that. I think coffee, especially if done correctly, I do bulletproof coffee. Dave Asprey is one of my closest buddies. I do that every day, but, you know, I'm not drinking coffee all day, right?
You don't have, like, 20 cups of coffee to keep you going.
Yeah, if you, I mean, I'm not going to get up in the morning unless there's coffee waiting for me. I'm not going to do it. But if, you know, you cannot make it throughout the day without your pots and pots of coffee, there's an issue. If you can't make it every two or 3 hours without having to eat, there's an issue. So we're always looking at what, you know, it's like you should have great, steady, sustained energy, right? You should be able to go 4 to 6 hours before you need to eat again. Start the day with some coffee, but you shouldn't feel like you have to have coffee at 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's, you know, a little over the top.
Yeah, I have somebody in our healthy challenge who I just weaned off coffee totally over a month time or so, but was drinking like 14 cups of coffee a day.
Yikes, yeah, because that's, I mean,
a ton of coffee. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of coffee.
Way too much. Now, little coffee is actually, and yeah. Again, I believe coffee is a health, well, the studies show it's health food, but it's like anything. I mean, water is great for you, but you don't want to overdo it, you know, so.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, gosh, this has been such an educational, inspiring conversation. I don't know the answer to this question, so I don't know if I should even ask it. But how is your son? What happened?
My son is doing great. So he is. We're actually working on like kind of a school transition thing right now. He lost his last year of high school because he was mainly in the hospital during that time. So we're still working on that piece. He's about 2.5 years out now. He's 6'1", healthy, fit, happy. You know, a little bit of short-term memory issues. Don't know how much of that will stay because it takes about 5 years to really come back from a brain injury.
Yeah.
His dad has been amazing, amazing, amazing. I always want to give him a shout-out. He's been incredible bringing him back. I was really good at harnessing the help at the hospital. I'm really good at that part, and my ex-husband is the most patient human being on the planet. And to bring someone back from a brain injury there needs to be so much more out there about that, which will start to come out of this next book, is what can I do to help? Because it's the number one thing that boys 18 to 24 face, and there's nothing out there for them. And there's not a lot being talked about it. And so many of us injure our brain and don't even realize we do it, and we don't understand the mood swings and the depression and the stuff that we're facing. So anyway, that'll be my next labor of love here.
Great information.
to be developed.
Yeah,
stay tuned.
Absolutely. And that is scary. Just, I know my dad had swelling on his brain and all those different things, and also the bug in the vent, and just it sounds very, very similar, only different things that put him in the hospital. But still, yeah, it's terrifying. But my dad's been alive, has survived now for, about 11 years now. So that's good to be a stroke survivor of 11 years. And he's completely changed his diet and everything down to not eating any of the artificial stuff or the soda or anything like that. He's a really good diabetic, almost to the point where you can pull off medications and things like that, which is cool.
Awesome.
By following things like your book, which has helped him. So thank you for being, that's the full circle of kind of why I just love you so much, because you've helped our family so much. So thank you for that,
okay.
All that you do for the world and for other people. And I just thank you for your time. Really very special to chat with you. Very, very special.
Oh, thank you. So appreciate it.
Yeah, let me add also that, I think this is very powerful stuff that you're talking about, and I'm going to go get the book today. I'm going to do this. Thank you.
Yeah, I have it already.
Awesome.
I will buy it.
Love it.
So, yeah. Love
thank
it.
You.
So, all right.
Well, the big one is the cookbook, too. So
yeah.
Be sure to
grab
that.
When does that come out?
That comes out May 26th. We are doing a cookathon, which is like a live broadcast online cookathon May 7th, which is free at sugarimpactdietlive.com. Everyone can join in. In fact, the minute you join in, I give you like my favorite pantry makeover, shopping list, etc. at sugarimpactdietlive.com. But that's where I'm going to be showing how to make a bunch of these recipes very easily. So
good.
That's a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
All right, thank you. I hope you'll come back again. I would love to do a show. Yeah, I'd love to do a show. It doesn't have to be so long the next time. We're trying to get to know you and introduce. A lot of our audience knows who you are already, but there were some that weren't totally familiar, so I thought that was kind of cool. But if we could do a shorter show maybe on food allergies, just for our food allergy community, I think they would love it too.
Sure. Always love to talk about that. One of my favorite subjects, as you can imagine.
Yeah, mine too. Exactly. I've got a medic alert on my left arm, so... All right, awesome.
Yep.
Thank you so much, and thank you for being here. And everybody out there listening, thank you so much for being with us. We're almost at 2 million downloads and views and everything, and we've got a couple million people following us on social media. We thank you so much for all of your support and love with sharing our shows and telling your friends about the Best Ever You show and besteveryou.com and everything, and we just appreciate you, and thank you everybody at Blog Talk Radio for supporting our show also. So have a great day, everybody, and thanks for listening, and thank you again, JJ. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.